My name is Joshua Deisinger. I'm from Middle Tennessee. We have a farm there, Bountiful Blessings Farm. Yeah, so we're just going to go over the ways that we try to control the animal pests. You know, we're not going to be talking about insect pests. We're talking about mammal pests mostly, you know, birds and rabbits, raccoons, possums, any of that kind of stuff. So that's mostly what we're going to be focusing on, and just how we've dealt with that on our farm. So in my mind, the number one pest control that I feel like always should be where you start is fencing. It's just the easiest and the most, you know, overall, it just does the best overall job. So they've got your permanent fencing and like a movable fencing. So we're going to go over, spending most of our time on the fencings. So, permanent fencing when you think about it, it seems like, okay, it's going to be the easiest thing. You just put up a fence, and it's kind of a one and done kind of thing. You got your fence up, and it can keep all the pests out of your area. So the pros to permanent fencing would be, obviously, if built correctly, you can fully protect your whole area. Now, when I say built correctly, it has to be built very well. So, all the way to the ground with, you know, like a maybe 2x4, wire meshing or something like that. Something small, obviously, so your rabbit and stuff can't get through. All the way to the ground. Ideally, like a hot wire close to the bottom so you don't have stuff trying to dig. Maybe a hot wire mid-range, you don't have stuff crawling over. I mean, it's got to be a very thorough fence to really completely keep stuff, you know, because raccoons, possums, anything that can climb a tree is going to be able to climb any fence you put up unless it's got a hot wire. So, yeah, that's what I mean by a correctly built. So the other pro is that it's a one-time build. So you put up your fence and you're done. It's a one-time build, one-time expense. And I was talking about it with my dad, and to me, like, in theory, it sounds like for sure the easiest way to go. But we've found when we really get, you know, really think about it and think about all this maintenance and stuff, it's potentially not the most appealing. So those are the two pros I have. The cons, limits your driving access around your farm and slows you having to open and close gates. So for us, unless we just had like a massive fence that was around our whole packing shed, growing area, just everything, it would really, if we just had fence around our fields, it would really hinder getting around, because we, you know, we come into our fields at the top, we, you know, we've got little like drive, little roads between all of our fields on a grid, and so we can go wherever we want, and having a fencing around that would hinder, you know, you have to go in through your gate and out through your gate and stuff like that. And this also really is going to work best for someone that's got a very close together growing area. You know, if you're in a place where your terrain or whatever causes you to have, you know, some fields here, and you're kind of spread out, it's going to be really hard to get a good permanent fencing around everything. So it's going to be ideal if your fence is pretty, I mean, if your growing area is pretty close together. And then another con is that it has to be maintained regularly. And if you've ever had a permanent fencing and tried to maintain it without spraying it, it's, you know, it's pretty difficult, especially one that goes all the way to the ground, because you can't like, go along with the weed eater right under it, because you're hitting that. You don't have any gap underneath there. If you've got hot wire on it, anything that grows up and, you know, hits your hot wire, is going to be grounding you out. So you get some grass growing up around it and stuff, and pretty soon your hot wire is not going to be doing anything. So it takes a lot of maintenance. Also, you know, if you don't have hot wire and you've got, you know, you don't stay on top of the maintenance as much and you get like honeysuckles and stuff growing up it, it will, you know, not super quickly, but relatively quickly just start breaking down your fence. And it's just, you know, it's, the weight pulling on it. And then you've got, you know, trees and stuff growing right through your fence that stuff can just crawl over, and it kind of just starts, defeating the purpose of that. So, maintenance is a really big thing with the permanent fence. And that's something, because we've got permanent fencing, for some of our livestock stuff, and it's something that we still haven't fully, come to a good, like, solution with. Because the solution is a spray, you know, that you can just, you know, have your tank on your four-wheeler or whatever and just go along and spray your line. But it's kind of difficult to find, an organic spray that really works. So if we had a good solution with that, it would definitely help, but something we're still trying to figure out. The other con to a permanent fencing is it's very expensive. You know, because you're going to have to be doing something that's, if you got deer, that's really tall, you know, 7 or 8 feet. And so it's going to be a pretty large expense to put up a permanent fencing, that's that size. So what we have concluded with for fencing is a non-permanent movable fencing. So the pros to that are that it's quick, and easy to put up. How our farm is laid out, most of our growing area that we're fencing is in, 30 by 100 plots with like a 12-foot kind of drive path in between. So there, it's in a field, two plots thick just beside each other, and there's a 12-foot driving path in between both directions. So when we fence, we're only fencing one 30 by 100 plot. And we fence the things that we have found are, you know, especially, susceptible to like deer. Mostly what we're fencing for is deer. So our strawberries are something we always have to fence, sweet potatoes, carrots, beets. Yeah, deer love beets. I guess since we're not recording this, we can do questions whenever. I don't feel like I've got enough time that I'm going to be running out of time, so I'll take questions, a few at least, while we're going.
Concerning deer, how high does the fence
have to be? Okay, after I go through this, I'll get to our actual fence and give you the dimensions. It worked good for us.
Okay.
That's what we use. What we use is easy to put up. You're just putting it around your select crops. It's pretty inexpensive. And it doesn't need a lot of maintenance. It really doesn't need any maintenance except, sometimes when we put a fencing up and then we don't have, you know, something else that's going back in that, and we need to take the fencing down, it stays up for 6 months or a year, and then it's real trouble because you get grass that, because it kind of like lays out on the ground a little bit, and you get grass that grows up in it, and it's a real pain to take down. So if you keep your fields mowed and stuff around it and stuff, it's very simple and easy to put up, take down, stuff like that. The cons, doesn't last forever. It gets damaged more easily, and then you continually have to put it up, take it down, which is not a huge con in my opinion. Okay, so then we'll get to what we actually use. It's this 7.5 foot or 7.5 tall flex plastic deer fencing. You can get it a lot of places. The last stuff that my dad bought, he bought just online from Home Depot. He gave me a name that was like the proper name for it or whatever. This is what they called it on the Home Depot site. They called it Flex Plastic Deer Fencing. And I just searched online like plastic deer fencing, and it was coming up with this lots of places. So it's pretty easy to come by. The main thing that you have to watch out for is just getting something that's really flimsy. This stuff is pretty, it's pretty sturdy, and it's, you know, I mean, it's not like thick plastic, but enough that a deer is not just going to like bust through it, and it's not going to be ripping when you're trying to put, like, you can't, you know, if we two people grab it and pull on it, you're not going to rip it. Like, it's pretty strong. Now we do go through it mostly like, you know, hit it with a mower or weed eater or something. And so it doesn't last us forever, but I mean, it lasts us a good, you know, 5 or 6 years probably. And if you get a little rip in it, we'll zip tie it and, you know, make it last a little longer.
Do you have to stretch it? Like,
no. I'll give you some pictures of ours like up, but it's very easy.
Is it pretty flexible?
Yeah. Yeah. So you buy, it's like in rolls. So yeah, this stuff is on Home Depot's site. It was $225 for a 330-foot roll. So it's, you know, it's relatively inexpensive. You need some T-posts to put it up and stuff. So 330-foot roll for
$225.
Yes. Okay, so this is actually one of our fences around our strawberries. So we get an 8-foot T-post, pounded in like maybe 14, 16 inches. And then we use these T-post clips, put one at the top of the post, pretty close to the top. And then you just roll your fence out around. And we put our T-posts pretty far apart. I think we have four there. So that's like 20, 25 feet apart. Maybe we have five. I don't know. I mean, 18 to 25 feet apart. So we don't put, for one of our fields, I think we only use 10 T-posts, 10 or 12 T-posts. So you pound your T-post, then you put your clip, just one clip on the top. And then you roll your fencing out all the way around, pull it up, clip it, on the top of the fence on there, and then it lays out on the ground, maybe close to a foot probably. It kind of comes down and lays out. And so it keeps stuff from just being able to walk or push under it because it's laying out. So stuff can't, from the inside stuff can push out from but the outside stuff can't really push in. This left picture is like our corner where we start and end the fence. We'll put a clip at the top and the bottom so that you can clip it back up at the bottom. And it's like flimsy enough. It's sturdy enough to stand up between those T-posts. I mean, when you're putting it up, you hook it on your one T-post, go to the next one, pull it pretty tight and hook it on. So it stands up all the way, but it's flimsy enough that nothing can crawl up it. If it tries to crawl up, it'll just kind of like flop back over. So, it's not a sturdy enough, fencing for pests to crawl up. And we really haven't had any issue with deer, getting in this if it's put up properly. Now, sometimes we're a little sloppy and we get a deer in there, but, do we have questions? So this is my last slide on fencing. So if I haven't gone over something on fencing that you're questioning, ask me questions on fencing now.
At the bottom, though, you said the part that's kind of rolled
mm-hmm.
ground,
mm-hmm.
you're not burying that part or anything. Nothing's trying to crawl underneath it as far as you
So, you know, like I said, this fencing is primarily for deer. And we'll have, you know, around the strawberries, like sometimes we'll get like possums and stuff late season once they figure out they're there, trying to get in there, and they can generally root around long enough to find some, you know, especially if you keep your grass mown low. And the way we do this, since we only got a clip at the top, it's super easy. You just walk around real quick, pick up the bottom, fold it up, clip it on the top. You can, you know, walk around your fence in 2 minutes and clip it up, and then you go around with the weed eater and you're not like hitting your fence and stuff. So if you keep your grass mown down and your fence is in good condition without like rips and stuff, it'll keep pretty much anything out because it's laying down enough, it's flat on the ground, stuff, you know, potentially could kind of nose under it, but for the most part, it's going to keep everything out. Yes.
So what length T-posts do you use?
These are 8-foot posts.
And you drive them in?
I mean, you know, if you use a T-post, they've got the little, like, the little wedge thing on it, and so you're supposed to drive it till that's under the ground, and I would say it's 16 inches or 18 inches, I don't know, something like that.
Is that still high enough to keep the deer?
Yeah, we've never had deer jumping. I mean, I've heard plenty of people talking about deer jumping over 8-foot fences and stuff. And if you have the problem with that, then I'm sorry. And I mean, our deer just might not be that persistent because we don't have deer jumping over this. And it's, I mean, sometimes it like, we get it up not even that great and it's like kind of folded down in between the posts and stuff. And I mean, our deer are pretty, I don't know. I guess they're just not that intense. All right, we got one here. Yeah. So you use the same netting, but you put it up in a more permanent way. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there does seem to be some kind of, I don't know, like deer just don't seem to like the fencing. I don't know if it's because they can get like tangled up in it or if it's just visually, it's kind of like hard for them to like tell like depth where it is and stuff. Yeah. But, they definitely seem to, I mean, and we've got like our permanent fencing for our goats and stuff. It's not super tall. It's, you know, like a, I don't know, 4.5 or something, and they'll jump right over it and they'll go in the pasture and stuff. But we don't have any real issue with them on what, you know, plots that we have this up.
Why did you say space at
I think that on our plots, which are 100 feet long, we only put 4 posts, which would be 25. I don't know if that's right. I feel like we must put 5 because I feel like 12 posts is what we use per. So you'd put 5 down your side. And then one in the middle on the end, which, so the ends are 15 feet between posts. The sides, it would still be 25 feet even with 5 posts because you got your end, it'd be 25 feet with 5 posts on 100 foot. So, 25 feet is the furthest on the ends. We've got them 15 feet. That's what works for us, and it's, if you're having more issue with deer, because it does kind of sag in the middle and stuff, you might need to put a little bit closer together so you get a more consistently tight and tall line. Any other questions on fencing?
Just a comment about the fencing sagging. My understanding is that because the deer, especially, they can't sense depth very well.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that looks like fence, and they might still try to fence it if it's perfectly straight. But if it's, you know, 5 feet and it's got some dimension to it, they'll just give it because they're not confident to be able to jump it.
Yeah.
And so when it's sagging like that, it probably further discourages them because they just can't tell will they get, you know, snagged on it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that there's some kind of something like that because, I mean, even places where it's like down, like on the corner here, if we don't put it back up or whatever and it's just kind of like rolled over on the corner, like they still don't really mess with it. Even when it's, you know, when it's on the ground, if it's like on the ground but it's like bubbled up or anything, they just don't like stepping there, you know, getting their hooves through it and whatever. So they really are deterred by it.
And then for the gate, you just like overlap that over and kind of hook it on one of those posts and then just open it up to...
Yeah, so the picture here, well, we don't ever try and get in there with our tractor and stuff when the fence is up. I mean, you can't, you know, it's easy enough to pull down and whatever, but we, you know, once the plot is prepared, and we don't use a tractor a whole lot, but once the plot is prepared and planted, then we'll put our fence up and we'll take it down before we're pulling the crop out. So yeah, we just have on the corner here, you just got your clip on the top and bottom instead of just on the top. Got it hooked there, and then you just hook it back on the bottom when you're done. Was it you? Okay.
It's just plastic. There's no wire.
There's no wire. Yeah, it's just a plastic, but it's pretty tough.
And it does deteriorate in the sun.
Not, I mean, I guess it probably does a little bit. You know, it'll, you know, some of the older stuff we have is a little bit more prone to like ripping and stuff. But it's just something that we have as an expense every, you know, 6-8 years, just whenever we kind of wear through. Yeah.
So it's mainly against deer. So what the animals can get through with it?
You're saying what animals can get through the fence? It just depends on how, I mean, if it's put up like this, your grass is real short and stuff, there's not really going to be anything that can get through unless it's just really determined to get in there. It'll be laying on the ground. You're not really going to have rabbits getting in there. Your corner potentially could be a weak spot where if something was really like walking the fence, they could come to that and potentially get in. So that might be somewhere that you'd have to, you know, reinforce a little bit, but it's not sturdy enough for stuff to crawl over it. So the only stuff that could get in is things that kind of would like nose under it. Dig a little bit. So maybe like a possum or armadillos, something that we have a lot of, or we used to have a lot of. You know, that's not really something we've struggled with that much. When we first started farming, I think it was earlier even when my parents were just doing like, more serious home gardening, we had one groundhog, like, I don't know if it was just probably not just one groundhog, but it was like one hole that was like really close to the garden. And I mean, they tried all kind of stuff and, but, I mean, we have them around. Like, our neighbor across the road caught, like, 8 of them in a week in his trap. But we're just not something we've really struggled with, thankfully. I don't know what the, what was that?
Next to your neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was, yeah, he caught, like, 2 parents and then, like, a bunch of babies. So, yeah, unless there's any other questions, we'll.
I have one.
Okay. You know, and this fence is very versatile. I mean, you can put it up however you want. Mr. Myers said he had it up, you know, as a permanent fencing. You can use like ground stakes, like ground staples that are, you know, 6-8 inches long and staple it in along the ground all the way around it. It just makes it more difficult to move. And for us, it's a very quick to put up and take down fencing. We're not trying to use it for permanent fencing, and we're really just trying to keep deer out. Around the strawberries, we...
Will the wind move it, or...?
No. No, I mean, maybe a little bit, but not enough to really affect anything, no.
How much wind do you have?
What was that?
How much wind do you have?
Not like here, or Oklahoma or something, no. I mean, we have... Yeah, sometimes. I mean, this year we had like the worst kind of storms we've had since we've been farming. I mean, we had a couple greenhouses that got blown, and we had our tomato house in the spring. We had the plastic blow off of it, and we replaced it, and then the plastic blew off of it like a week later. So the fencing, it doesn't have enough like to catch wind. I don't think it'd really be a problem even if you have strong winds. So did you have a question?
Just to make a comment about the reason I'm interested in a movable fencing is because inevitably you need to get a tractor in there,
mm-hmm.
some other equipment. If you've got something permanent, dealing with staples in the ground,
mm-hmm.
anything that inhibits you from being able to work the land, it's just going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I would say with this, we have it up, like I said, 30 by 100 plots. I would say two people could take it down or put it up in 15 minutes. And I don't think that's even really a stretch. Like, I feel like I could do it faster if I was really, like, trying to, you know, just, like, average working speed. You know, you have, it's very helpful when you're rolling it up to have two people because it's 7.5 feet long to get one person, especially when you're starting your roll. If you're trying to start a roll by yourself, I mean, I've rolled so many of these up by myself, and the roll's, like, this big around when I'm done, and it's all, like, flimsy and stuff. If you have two people, you can, you know, each of you can be going on the end and getting a tight, like, core. And then once you have that, then it's pretty easy to get it up. But then, yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, easily 15 minutes and it'd be up or down. Yeah, but, I mean, I feel like even with the post, you have one, you know, lay them out, one person putting the post in, one person rolling the netting out. I mean, I think, and we have, like, a post puller. I don't know if you all have seen. I wish I had a picture of it because it's like the most ingenious thing for pulling up T-posts. But I mean, you can just get it at like Tractor Supply. But it's like this little lever thing. So it's got a post with a foot on the ground. It's got a hinge and a pull. It hooks on the post and you just, and it pulls it up. So I mean, you just go along, grab the post, go to the next post, pull it up, and then you have someone else that's, you know, finishing putting them up and putting them in the tractor or something like that. So it's really quick. And for, what was that? Yeah. I mean, that's what we primarily are using it for. So, if you're somewhere you have like really rocky ground or something, it'll take a little longer for pounding in posts and stuff. But, for the most part, it's pretty easy to put the posts in and stuff. So, all right. I think, yeah, I'll take your question.
Thanks. How do you
know
the end, the corner, wherever you want to get in and out?
That's the picture here on the left. So where the roll started, we'll go all the way back around. We just have the clip on the top and on the bottom. And so we'll just like unclip it on the bottom to walk in there. And then when we're done, we just clip it back on the bottom. So, I mean, there is kind of a gap there. And a lot of times you have a little bit left open. You try and make it so it kind of like rolls around the corner a little bit. But that's just how we do it. It's pretty simple. So our... and this is our threefold predator protection. So kind of going, the last two, I guess, could be interchangeable. Our fencing is obviously the main thing that we put up around anything that we really are struggling with. But dogs are our second source of predator protection. So we have multiple different dogs. This is our Great Pyrenees Cabela, and she's a great dog. We got her mostly for like our livestock, but they're really good dogs. So a dog is, I mean, low maintenance, you know, kind of sounds like bad. You know, I mean, you're taking care of the dog, but it's still low maintenance. I mean, There's not a whole lot you got to do. Constant alarm system and a companion friend. So we got many years ago. We got a rare breed of dog called a Karelian bear dog. They're from like Finland or something, but they have quite a few of them in the northwestern United States, and they use them for like chasing out of like parks and stuff, grizzly bears. So they're, you know, pretty vicious little dogs. But yeah, if they've got like bears that they're having issue with, like in certain parks or whatever, instead of, you know, getting rid of the bear, like shooting it or something, they'll just send these dogs and kind of send it off to a different place. So we were trying to breed them. That didn't go anywhere. So we had two of them. Our male died last year. I think he was really, he was probably like 16 years old or more. We still have a female. They were great dogs. We have a little, like, I don't even know what, a little mutt stray dog. Great dog. She's like on her 12th life or something. She's been bit by rattlesnake twice and her head was like huge. We like watched her get attacked by a deer. It like jumped on her and like put its hoof right in her. We've run her over like straight over with our car. I mean, she's a little tank. So, the next slide, I have like some breeds, but really this is what I have for breeds. This is right now, this picture was like maybe 2 days ago, but we got 8 little puppies from our Pyrenees. But the breeds that I have are Great Pyrenees, Anatolian Shepherd, and Marima. I think that's how you say it. But these breeds are more, livestock breeds. So like, especially if you have, livestock that you're wanting protected, these breeds, do especially good with that. That's why we have our Great Pyrenees, but some of our other ones, do just as well, on guarding our crops. Really, like, so I said most large breeds, and I mean, it doesn't have to be like the large breed. The one dog that I was saying is, lasted forever. I mean, she's pretty small. She's like maybe, I don't know, 20 pounds. She's a pretty small dog and she's vicious. So yeah, it's really one of those things that if you're guarding your crops and some livestock and stuff, these breeds are pretty good. But as far as just like breeds for, guarding, like chasing away animals and stuff, Jack Russells, they're a feisty little dog. I feel like they're like rabbit hunting dogs or something. You can adopt a, go to the shelter or something. It's most dogs, if raised, outside and stuff like that, it's kind of their natural instinct. So it mostly works. Do you have a question?
Yeah, quick. I don't know very much about dogs. I see your list here. Is your name Joshua?
Yes.
Okay. Joshua, we have a, he's like a pit boxer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has to trap them until my husband has to go out and shoot them and put them out of their misery. And do these other types do that too, or just bark and keep them away?
I mean, I don't. It's kind of. I guess that's kind of part of it. I mean, on our farm, like. We don't have that much. We struggle with like possums and stuff eating our strawberries and stuff like that. So the rabbits our dogs sometimes get. That's a little bit trickier for a dog to catch. Armadillos, they'll get a lot. Possums, they'll get a lot. Other than that, there's not really anything that they're like, killing, attacking that we wouldn't necessarily want them to. But that is kind of part of the territory of a dog. You can't really like train it to, you know, attack this and not this. So, you know, deer, we don't really have them like taking down deer. I mean, I know there's dogs that can and will, but none of our dogs will. And, you know, for the most part, we're just trying to get them to chase them out. And, our Pyrenees, she does more chasing than actually like attacking. Our other dogs, I think, will kill more stuff than she does. She's kind of funny, like, in the field, she'll chase deer. As soon as they get into the woods, she just turns around. But that's not necessarily a Pyrenees thing. Because also people talk about Pyrenees being like huge wanderers and chasing stuff forever. And, so really it's, there's breeds, you know, you can do some research and there's breeds that, are going to be potentially better than others, but it's a little bit more dog to dog. And for the most part, most dogs that are raised outside, are going to naturally have that instinct to chase animals. So our dogs have killed countless armadillos and, possums and stuff. Our cats kill rabbits. That's pretty impressive. I don't know how, but our cats will bring back rabbits that are bigger than them. You have a question?
I think Labrador retrievers, at least they're worthless. Mm-hmm. They're not good for chasing dogs, taking animals away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So don't get a lab. We've never struggled with that. If anybody didn't hear, he was asking about the dogs eating the crops. We've never struggled with that. The only thing that we have struggled with is that for whatever reason, our dogs are like savers of their food. They'll kill something and they'll go bury it. And sometimes they bury it in the garden. And so they'll be like, you'll walk into your field or something and there'll be like this nice bed of something. And then in the middle, it'll just be like all dug up and you'll just know like, okay, there's something there. So you got to go there and pull out and there'll be a possum or something. I have seen our dogs like just grab a possum and it, you know, possums play dead. And then they just like instantly went and buried it. So that we've struggled more with our dogs, like, kind of tearing it up a little bit, but we feel like it's minimal compared to what the, you know, armadillos or whatever would, you know, how much they would root it up. So, yeah. Any other? No, it's okay. I don't have, like, a ton of stuff, so I'm happy to answer questions and be able to meet, like, individual needs. Our dogs are like genius. I don't know. I mean, our Pyrenees, I guess maybe less. We haven't really had a lot of issue in the garden, but the Karelian Bear dogs we had, you could watch them. They would like go from the yard and like literally like back into the bushes, like just right into the bushes and just go to the bathroom and then walk out. Like it was amazing. So we never really had any issue. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why, but so I mean, like every once, this is not, it's not a big deal now. Yeah, and I would say like some of the dogs that we've had over the years, and like just what I've heard from other people, what I've seen from other people, a lot of times just like a good old mutt is like, you know, will, I mean, do better than most purebred, you know, something or other. And a lot of times they're a much stronger and healthier dog. A lot of times purebred dogs, you can get like some more issues. I don't know, but that's what I've seen. So the third part of our third fold, is hunting. And this is a quote from Mrs. White, just to ease anybody's questions. This earth has been cursed because of sin, and in these last days, vermin of every kind will multiply. These pests must be killed, or they will annoy and torment and even kill us and destroy the work of our hands and the fruit of our labor. And there is that, I guess it's selected messages, third selected messages, 329. There is like quite a bit more below this. She was talking, this section is actually called like spraying fruit trees or something. And she talks about like, a lot of insects, but she also mentions like mammals and stuff. So, that's that. And yeah, there's a lot, like quite a bit more that's quite interesting to read. Yes.
I have a comment about that. We have a problem with deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was concerned about shooting deer out of deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told by Missouri Conservation, you can shoot a deer if any time of the year if they're in your garden,
mm-hmm,
or your orchard eating your food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a right to kill them.
Yeah, that's something my dad was asking me about, just like wanted to make sure I wasn't promoting doing anything illegal and stuff. And that's good to know. And I'm sure, you know, potentially different states are different, but I think for the most part, that is true that if it's in your, if it's in your field causing harm to your, crops and stuff, there's exemption for that. And, you know, it may or may not be your kind of thing. We haven't actually had to deal with any of that shooting deer, but like, it doesn't have to be a waste. It can be dog food. You know, I have friends that, almost solely feed their dogs fresh meat through the winter, and don't pay anything for it. So, you know, that might not necessarily be your thing. You gotta freeze it and do that kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to go wasted. Yeah.
So, take a picture of the animal in your garden. It's real easy to do, and it eliminates
the question.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if that's something that you feel like may be an issue for you, you know, getting in trouble for, definitely can document, you know, and I think that should more than cover your back. Yeah.
You don't have hogs up
there, right? I do not. No. I yeah, I don't envy you all. I don't know if you have them here or, but I mean, I know Texas is full of them, but, yeah, hogs, that's not something that I have dealt with. And we are, I mean, they are in Tennessee, and there was a record one shot this year that was massive. So I've seen them in Tennessee, but they're not on our property yet. And I don't look forward to that. We had, the miniature version of an armadillo, that we, maybe like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, we didn't have any armadillos. And now they're just everywhere, you know, and so they'll dig it up, but nothing compared to a hog. So.
Your dog's a gift keep away any possible hogs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dogs, you know, and when you're talking about hogs versus rabbits, then you might really want a larger breed dog because, you know, they're old, you know, they can hurt dogs and stuff. So.
We do not.
No. No. So, you know, if having a gun, being around guns and something is not something that you've grown up with, it's something to take seriously. And it's not, you know, well, people, you know, I enjoy target shooting and stuff like that. They can be fun, but it's not a toy. And so if it's something that you're new to, you know, educate yourself. Don't wish you'd educated yourself. You know, there's plenty of stuff you can learn online. If you feel like it, you can go to a gun safety class, anything like that. But just take it seriously because they are, you know, dangerous if used in the wrong way. So that's the one thing. Educate yourself before you go doing something you wish you hadn't. And then spend time, like, learning, target shooting, stuff like that. You know, the last thing you want to do is cause an animal undue, you know, even though you are trying to, you know, kill an animal, you're not trying to cause it undue pain and, you know, pain to yourself. So learn to shoot well before you go out and shoot an animal, you know, in its leg and it runs off and may live for another week. You know, just take the time to educate yourself and learn, so that you can execute, your desired shot correctly and not causing undue, pain to animals. Okay. So, I'm going to go through, and my parents didn't grow up with guns, and it took a little bit of convincing with my dad, and, you know, he's come around, and he's the one that gave me that quote to put up, and he definitely feels the need of it, and it is more or less our least used way of protecting from pests, but nonetheless, it is used. So I didn't grow up with it. I'm not at all like an expert on guns, and I'm sure there's, you know, those here that know a lot more than me. But if you don't know anything, it can be a little bit like daunting because there is a zillion different, you know, different guns and different things. So I'm going to go through the three that we use the most, and as already stated, we do not have hogs, and so none of them are extremely high-powered rifles. You know, if you're out here with hogs, you might need like a, you know, 223 AR or something. But ours is more or less raccoons or smaller. So the most classic, easiest to come by would be a .22 caliber, extremely inexpensive to shoot, and relatively inexpensive to purchase, if you can find anything nowadays. I mean, at least in our area, all the shelves are empty, so it's it's inexpensive to shoot if you can find ammunition. They're great for small animals. They're just great to learn on because, as stated, they're inexpensive to shoot. They're not like loud and just obnoxious. And you got a range up to 100 yards. You know, I mean, that's give or take depending on your skill and your time put into it. So I put up the Ruger 10/22, probably the number one. There's tons of different kinds of .22, but that's probably the number one .22 caliber rifle. And then a 17 HMR, also good for small pests, but the .22 has like a bullet speed of like 1,200 feet per second. The 17 HMR is twice that, 2,400. So it reaches a lot further with more accuracy. So if you're struggling with like rabbits or something and they're just really skittish, you can't get anywhere close to them, you just see them across the field, it may be a better choice. Range up to 200 yards. I mean, it can reach further if you really are steady and good. A little bit more expensive than a .22 to shoot, but not, you know, nothing extreme. And the bottom, there's two different Ruger 7717. I'm not sure about that one. The Savage is the one that I have. But, yeah, there's that. And then a shotgun. Very versatile. You have a large variety of shell options. And, I mean, I don't even know all of them, but with your basic, you know, smaller shot, bird shot, if you're having an issue with like maybe crows or things, you know, that's just a great, you know, it's a shell, for anybody that doesn't know, that's packed with BBs of various sizes. But so you've got, you know, maybe half an inch or up to an inch of shell that's packed with BBs, so it disperses it. So, you know, and you can have different, like, chokes on the end with, that changes your disperse. But like a bird that's flying and stuff, you can, you know, out at 50 yards, you might have a, you know, a pretty decent size disperse. So if you got, you know, rabbits that sometimes in our greenhouses and stuff, we'll have rabbits in there and they'll come like streaking out. And it's much easier to just get a hit on them than if you're trying to scope them in or something with a single shot kind of rifle. So that range is generally around 50 yards. You know, you can get shots that are a solid, slug or like a buckshot or something that's going to reach further. But those two, the Remington 870 and the Mossberg 500, which is what I have, are some of the more popular. But that just gives you a little bit of an overview if you really, if it's something that you wanted to get, but you didn't have, really an idea. Hopefully that gives a little bit of insight, and there's plenty of research that you can do. So we probably have like 5 more minutes ish. So do you have any questions? Yes.
Do you know, anything about electric packs, like solar?
I use it for, chickens. I have a, oh, I didn't know it was being recorded. Okay. The question was on electric fencing. So I use electric fencing for my chickens, and I'm moving it weekly. But it's like a netting. So that has to be, if you're using like a netting electric fence, it's got to be kept, you know, the grass under it has to be kept very short, because you got hot wires that are very close to the ground. So since I'm moving it very regularly, it makes it easier. If you're talking about just like a strand electric fence, we haven't done that a lot. We haven't really used electric fence much.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yes.
How prevalent is black bear? An issue where you live?
Not where we live, no. They're in the eastern part of Tennessee, but not where we live, in the back. Okay, you have to.
I just wanted to tell folks, if you have an animal that you need to shoot, there's usually neighbors who can help shoot
it for you. That is an option, yes. And the other option I was going to just say is also trapping. Some people prefer that. That can be harder. Because you gotta entice your animal to get in a trap. If it's a groundhog or something, you got the hole there, you might be able to do it. But, I got, yep.
You know the greenhouses where the sides are open?
Uh-huh.
Do you use to
keep stuff from jumping in the sides? We don't. The question is on greenhouses, do we use anything to keep stuff jumping in the sides? We don't. For the most part, throughout the summer and everything, our doors are wide open anyways. So, but we don't have any issue with like deer and stuff in the greenhouses. Yes.
Yeah, one more question here. I've heard it, that if you put a radio in your garden, just to have constant noise,
mm-hmm.
there, that also
compels the... We had like forever ago, we had this, contraption that was supposed to be like a cougar scream. It was like a little, kind of like a radio, but every like 10 minutes it would go off, and it worked for like 2 nights, and then they just kind of like got used to it. The cougar never came, so they came back, and so yeah. Was there someone else? Yes.
Yeah,
I think you mentioned at the beginning about spray. Or anything instead of, anything you can spray around which would keep animals, some animals, from getting...
I've heard stuff like that, but we haven't really dealt with it, and I feel like it's the same kind of thing that we dealt with the cougar scream thing. I feel like it's something that if an animal can get just, like, used to it and, you know, they realize that smell's not bringing them any harm, then they kind of get used to it. Yes?
I heard that you wound one of the kind, the only.
You can purchase this gentleman's question. You can purchase a bottle, and it's called box urine, and it's manufactured. I don't really know what's in it, but I used it as a invisible fence around my garden.
Uh-huh.
And it was up in Wisconsin, but I didn't. There was a lot of deer. We were out in the country with woods nearby, and
that worked pretty good.
No raccoon, nothing with that.
Okay. Okay, she was talking about fox urine, bottle of it. Yeah, that's definitely an option. We haven't really tried that, but it's would definitely be something worth. I think there was someone over. Yes.
Do you have experience with solar powered, motion activated spotlights or sprinklers to keep those pests just kind of away from your garden and out of your yard? I've heard that can be effective on coyote and hogs and other animals.
Uh huh. Yeah, we have not done that. I think that at least for where we live, it's damp enough that you definitely wouldn't want any kind of solar activated sprinkler lights potentially, or some kind of like noise siren, something a motion sensing kind of thing potentially could work for us. You know, we're on a big enough plot of land. You know, that'd have to be a lot of them around to keep the area clear. Okay. You had a question.
We're kind of new to this, but last year a friend helped us plant a small garden. And we, as soon as the oak were about tall enough to start producing, the deer were eating the tops off. And he told us at the end of the day, just hang out your sweaty t-shirt, keep it wet. Well, my husband was putting on a different t-shirt every evening, and then we had to be out of town for a long weekend. So the same shirt was out there for a while. They still didn't bother.
Yeah, there's lots of different techniques like that you can try and put out to deter. I mean, for us, the fencing has worked well. We've tried other things previously, and every area, you know, you're going to deal with a little bit different stuff. I don't know if there's anything else. I think we probably should close it up since we're a few minutes after. I don't know if there's something that people are needing to get to. I mean, I'll be here. I'm happy to talk to anybody else that has questions, but I think we should probably close it up for the seminar. So thank you all for being here, and hope I was able to answer some of your questions.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.